powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Let's talk Mariners, just days away from opening day. Joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, host of Baseball Things, the podcast, is Jason Churchill. Hey, Church, how's it going?
Hey, pretty good. Guess what, guys? You guys are not going to believe this. I'm actually going to my first ever opening day here in Seattle.
What? Wow. You are a huge baseball fan, a baseball expert, and you've never been to opening day in Seattle?
No. I've gone down for the festivities, like, before the game and then just gone home. I got to be honest with you. I'm not real big on, like, lines and crowds. And so I've gone to minor league opening day at probably 6 or 8 different ballparks over the last, 25 years. But a friend of mine gifted me tickets for Thursday. So I'm going to do it for the first time. How about that?
This is like if a kid hasn't gone to Disneyland, so you go as an adult, and you're like, will it still work? Will the magic still be there? I don't know. I think you're going to have a great time. I'm so excited for Thursday. I'm actually going to get started by looking at yesterday and this morning, where we got some news about Brian Wu. Is that news about his IL stint concerning at all to you?
A little bit. I think it should a little bit. We obviously don't know a whole lot. The team knows a lot more than we do. The team probably knows more than they're going to tell us. Yeah, I think when someone has UCL, the Tommy John surgery, in their rear view, and we've seen them kind of shut down twice now in very similar fashion like Wu was last summer, is it caution? Is it an abundance of caution? Yes, but there's a reason for that. I think there's always, anytime someone gets shut down, anytime someone goes to the IL because of, X, Y, or Z, you have to be somewhat concerned. But at this point, we just kind of have to sit back, trust the team, and hope for at least Brian Wu's sake, and certainly the Mariners' sake as well, that he's going to be okay and he's just going to miss a couple of weeks and ramp back up, and maybe they get him back in May.
So the negative is Wu's going to be out. But the positive is we get to see Emerson Hancock. What can you tell me about this young man and his progression over the last couple of years?
Yeah, I got to be honest with you. I don't feel great about that. I wish I could, because when he was drafted number 6 overall in 2020, that was a weird year. It was a COVID year. Seasons were shut down. A lot of the college kids only made, 2, 3, 4 starts before the draft. But heading into that college season, Hancock was a candidate to be the number 1 overall pick. And things just have not gone well for him as a pro from a development standpoint. He was a 94 to 99 mile an hour fastball guy in college, 2 breaking balls, change up pretty good. And we're just not seeing any of that kind of stuff as a pro. And he's had some injury issues of his own, since he's been drafted and hasn't really pitched a ton considering it's, 3.5, almost 4 years ago that he was actually selected. So, development just hasn't come along as quickly. Injuries part of that, and the stuff just isn't where you want it to be. And to put it, kind of harshly but brutally honestly, to me, Emerson Hancock is not a major league pitcher. He's not a guy it's not ideal for Emerson Hancock to be on the opening day roster making starts out of the gate for a club that wants to win a division.
Are you kind of okay then with the team passing on Blake Snell? Because in hindsight, you're like, oh, it would be great to have another starter at this point. I know that there was some controversy. Some fans really wanted him here, including Blake, potentially. And other fans were okay with the Mariners passing. What do you think?
Yeah, I actually, big picture, it'd be great if the team invested in itself, in its on-field product more than it has. Taking a step back at this particular time was absolutely shameful. But beyond the ownership investment in the on-field product, when you're Jerry DePoto or Justin Hollander in this situation, you have a budget you have to stick to. You don't have a choice. That's not your call. And when you think about going out and adding pitching to that level, $20 million, $25 million, $30 million on the 2024 payroll alone, how do you make that work and also add to your offense, which you sorely needed to do? So the conversations I've been having, all winter is, they need some more pitching at the back end. But if you even go out and sign like a mid-rotation type, like a number 3, number 4 starter that costs you $8, $10, $12 million, Like, let's say you signed one of those guys because you were worried about something like this happening. You didn't feel great about Emerson Hancock's situation, and you didn't have anybody else that could really step in if there was an injury. And you go out and give that guy the $10-ish million. Guess what you can't do now? You can't trade for Jorge Polanco, or you can't sign Mitch Garver. So essentially, where we're sitting right now, and there's a little bit of hindsight in this, but it's your number five starter. As much as it sucks, as much potential as we think Brian Wu has, and he absolutely has it, and it's disappointing, if he does miss extensive time, it is your number five starter. Do you want to swap your number five starter for Mitch Garver or Jorge Polanco? Because they weren't going to be able to do all three of those things, unfortunately. So I think the front office handled it right. It would be ideal to have the Anthony DeSclafanis of the world to kind of step in. And, you know, if Emerson Hancock can't hold down the fort until Brian Wu gets back, you know, maybe Austin Voth jumps back into the rotation. He has starting experience. And I think Jonathan Diaz is probably on that list too.
Church, we heard Passan say in a clip earlier that he flirted with the idea of picking Mariners as, like, World Series contenders. Me, personally, I'm thinking, look, just make the playoffs, be in the mix towards the end of the season. Obviously, it's early. Haven't seen them play yet. Lots of baseball to be played. What are your expectations for this team?
Pain, I think. I think they have a chance to be good. But the thing I'm worried about, and I think is pretty critical from a lot of angles, is when you start off slow like they have the last couple of years, sometimes just in terms of wins-loss, sometimes it's win-loss, but the offense couldn't get going. It's really frustrating. It's frustrating for the team. We've heard players talk about it. It's certainly frustrating for fans to watch. I think it's important they get off to a decent start. And I'm looking at third base as one of those places where if Luis Urias and Josh Rojas can kind of stay out of the doghouse, so to speak, and have a couple of moments and put up decent numbers for the first month or two while the team kind of gets their feet underneath them, I think the team will be in a pretty good spot. I think this year's team has more upside than last year. I think it's better than last year, unless the Mitch Hanigers and the Luke Raleys and the Mitch Garvers, unless something happens, unless there's injury issues. You know, and we can kind of see some of this coming, you know, that's why the risk is so high. Or unless there are performance issues. I do think there's less probability on this year's roster. But if things work out in their favor at all, this is a 90-plus win team with a chance to be a couple of wins better than that if they pick up the right player in July or at the deadline.
I understand so much has to go right, and it's I don't want to use the word infuriating. It's hard because the potential is right there, but there's also an equal amount of potential for a really disappointing season because you've got players with an injury history and you've got, you know, more depth in theory, but still some question marks. So it's such a fascinating team to look at with, like, how volatile the season could get. It could be great or it could be disappointing. That said, when you said maybe expecting, like, pain, it sounds like you have a little more doubt than do some national reporters talking about the team. Jeff Passan this morning was like, yeah, I flirted with them as a World Series dark horse, but decided not to. Why do you think you have some of that doubt?
I just think relative to the last two seasons, I look at the roster and then I see more opportunity for the bad thing to happen. You know, for the performance to... You know, it's a volatile, you know, third base is volatile. Like, could Luis Urias do, you know, perform like he did a couple of years ago? He could. But he could also be more like last year and be hurt and not perform while he's healthy. Same thing with Luke Raley. The situation with Mitch Haniger. We all love Mitch Haniger. When he's healthy, he's usually pretty good. He certainly looked good in spring, you know, mechanically. He certainly looks healthy. You know, I'm yelling bubble wrap every time he steps to the plate and runs the bases. But, you know, the truth is, it wouldn't surprise anyone if Mitch Haniger played 30 games and had 100 plate appearances for the Mariners this year. I mean, that basically happened last year in San Francisco. Luke Raley, from a performance perspective, we don't know if he can hit lefties, and his consistency in general is certainly in question because he doesn't have a long track record of consistent performance playing every day or even holding down the fort against right-handed pitching and hitting enough. So there's volatility. There's risk in this roster, even a little bit more than a year ago. But I do think they've covered their bases about as well as you could expect them to. You know, Dylan Moore can face some left-handed, you know, pitching. Josh Rojas can face some right-handed pitching and give Luis Urias a break. Don't ask him to be the everyday guy, particularly at a position like third base. That's more traditionally an offensive-minded position. You are significantly better at second base. But that player, Jorge Polanco, has some injury history as well. So that's what it's really about for me. That's really the only question. If you were to tell me right now, Luke Raley's going to be about as good as he was last year. Mitch Haniger's going to play, 80 to 100 games and give you, 400-plus plate appearances. And Luis Urias was going to be, fringe average offensively at third base. I would tell you I think this Mariners team is winning the division. But I just can't bet on those things with a lot of confidence, that's all.
Julio makes this thing go. And, finished fourth in MVP last year, and I'm excited just to see how he's grown mentally, physically over the past year. Is there something specifically that you need to see out of Julio when this thing gets rolling?
Yeah, I want to see, because I've been talking about Julio. He's been a 5-6 win guy the last, two seasons, his first two seasons in the bigs, and he's only 23. But at any point in his career, he could take a huge step forward. I've been talking about him potentially. Like, I think the upside for Julio this year is to be a 7 or 8 win guy and be, literally the best player in the league, in the American League. When anybody predicts anybody other than Julio Rodriguez this winter to be the favorite to win MVP, I roll my eyes. Julio Rodriguez should be the MVP, front runner, at least as the season starts. Not that he's the only one that can win it. He should be that guy. He does everything, and everything here is set up for him to just go out there and hit. But the one thing I'm looking at is, can he have smarter at-bats? The chase is a really big deal for Julio Rodriguez, and he doesn't have to be Luis Arraez or Rod Carew when it comes to, making sure you swing at strikes, because he's going to hit a lot of balls hard that don't land in the strike zone. But knowing where your zone is, and he does, but being better at that and not expanding his zone and handling the right-handed breaking ball out of the zone and letting that go and taking that and forcing pitchers to throw in something he can handle is the way he's going to go from what he's been the last 2 years offensively, which is good but not great, to great, to Ronald Acuña Jr. territory. So that's the thing that I'm looking at the most with Julio is strike zone judgment and the discipline against breaking balls and pitches out of the zone.
The top three teams in this division, really the only three competing for playoff spots, are kind of neck and neck. The Astros are going to have some injuries they're dealing with that could slow the start of their season. It's so imperative that the Mariners get started earlier. It feels like a theme that I keep hearing over and over, which is why my, Jason, impossible to answer question is how. Like, what do they need to do as a team if they are to get off to a harder start than last season?
I don't know. Try to avoid freaking out, because it just hasn't happened, right?
Yeah.
So when you be jumping for joy, it's like, it's that old scene in Friends where Joey's jumping up and down on the bed because he's happy about stuff and then he gets hurt. Like, don't do that, I guess. Don't go nuts as you're watching this team. Hopefully Julio doesn't go crazy if they, win 15 in their first 22 or something like that and roll an ankle or sprain a shoulder or whatever it is. Yeah, I think once you get into that position, and that's why I said that if they get off to a pretty decent start and they avoid those, kind of covering themselves with dirt like they have the last couple of years and climbing out of a hole and relying on, they got to win 20 or 30 now or the 14-game winning streak, it sets them up to kind of the way the Seahawks, it seems, have set themselves up for the draft. They've taken care of so many things foundationally in free agency. They can just kind of go into the draft and go, all right, this is pretty clear what we want to do here and what we need to do, and we have some freedom. And I think that, getting off to a pretty good start, whether we're talking about a 30-game start or the first half of the season, if you're in good shape there, it makes things a little clearer and a little easier for Justin Hollander and Jerry DePoto to address team needs. And the last couple of years, they haven't been able to do much, and I hope they feel like they're in a better spot now to go out and do something significant, if indeed the team is in position to motivate them to go make a deal like that. I think their farm system is in a much better spot to produce, the kind of a trade scenario where teams are going to value those prospects properly. I think that's been the big issue the last couple of years, is their top prospects have been down in A ball. Now we're going to see some of them in Double A. Cole Young's going to be in Double A. Harry Ford, Tyler Locklear, some other guys could get to Double A during the season before the trade deadline. That changes their value. I just think that's the value of starting off pretty well and at least avoiding that that sub 500 bounce back and forth, you know, win two, lose two, kind of a scenario that we certainly saw last year and we've seen several times over the last 3-4 years. And it's mostly offensively. I think that's huge. I think it sets them up for huge success if the first month or so they can get off to a pretty good start. You know, it doesn't have to be 30-10. It doesn't have to be Detroit Tigers 1984. It doesn't have to be Mariners 2001. Just be pretty good. I mean, put that on a T-shirt, right? Just like, don't be bad. Just be pretty good. You don't have to be great. Just be okay the first 6-8 weeks of the season, and you're set up for a pretty good 2024 with a great chance to make the postseason.
Last one I got for you, Church. Man, I'm excited for you. Even I've been to a Mariners opening day, and I'm sure you're a way bigger baseball fan than I am. What are you excited to see or do? I'm not talking about the professional Church. I'm talking about, like, the fan. What are you looking forward to?
I got to be honest with you. I'm nervous. I don't get nervous either. Like, you know, you do radio, you do TV, you talk to people, you know, with names, and I don't get nervous about that, but I'm nervous to go to this game because, again, I don't like lines. I'm a curmudgeon when it comes to stuff like that. So I'm looking forward to avoiding that, getting to my seat and just watching the game. I'm not taking a notebook. I'm not going to pull out my phone.
Nice.
So I'm going to sit there with my dad and watch a game and hopefully not freeze. And that's always a thing early in the year. I kind of have this rule. I don't go to Mariners games. You know, I don't go to T-Mobile Park till after Memorial Day because it's so cold, right? So I'm kind of a baby when it comes to stuff like that, and I'll have to buck up on Thursday and enjoy it. But, yeah, I think being able to sit there and not think about it as, all right, I got to make sure I take these mental notes or literally take physical notes on my phone or on a notebook. I'm leaving all that stuff behind and just going to the game and kind of sitting there and enjoying baseball, you know, for the first time in 2024 and for the first time on opening day. It's weird. I thought about it. I was like, have I been to an opening day? I was like, oh my goodness, I have never been to a Mariners opening day. I've been on the second day of the season. I was at the second game ever at T-Mobile, but never opening day. And it just dawned on me as I was talking to a buddy of mine that gave me tickets and I was like, wow, this is going to be very, very strange. So I'm planning on like going down at like 1 p.m. You know what I mean? It's like a 7:10 start. I don't want to be unprepared, you know, when the game comes on, find parking, you know, maybe grab something to eat and kind of take it in and enjoy it, because it has been a while since I've been able to go to a big league game and not think of it, you know, to some extent as some sort of work project. So I'm really trying hard not to do that this time.
We're so excited for you, Jason. I am so excited for you for your first opening day, just 2 days away. You guys make sure you're listening to Baseball Things, the podcast, wherever you get your podcast, rate, review, subscribe. Thanks so much, Church.
You got it anytime.
Thanks, Church.
See ya. Thanks again to Jason Churchill of the Baseball Things podcast joining us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
First down, hip drop, controversy. What tweak would you make?
Man, I put something out on Twitter last night, and people were like, oh, my God, Bump. I go, am I the only one that doesn't think
Twitter
this
fights?
Is this compliment? I'm complicated. No, not fights, but, you know, I sit there and go back and
get
forth.
Get it together, Bump.
Yeah, you know, what the heck's going on?
You got a reputation.
Well, hang on. Number one rule of the show.
Oh, yeah, do it for the clout.
For the clout.
Exactly. Well,
if you can dunk on somebody, go right ahead.
That's right.
The one tweak I will make, because I watched a whole bunch of hip drops last night, and I go, the hip drop should only be illegal outside of the box down the field. I think when you're in the box and these linebackers and defensive linemen are trying to get these dudes to the ground, you do everything you can. Now, when you're on the outside on the perimeter down the field, I think the game changes a little bit. That's where I would ban the hip drop. People are passionate about this. And I'm like, look, I talk to a lot of people who play in this league on the defensive side who are like, look, you can avoid the hip drop. Tackles have been made without a hip drop. But people, for some reason, a lot of people just can't wrap their minds around it. So that's the one tweak I would make about the hip drop.
Second down. What team entered the chat, so to speak, as contenders if they have a good draft? And why do they remind you of the Seahawks in some ways?
They kind of do, man. This team has a young quarterback. That doesn't remind me of the Seahawks, but their styles are the same. Jordan Love, I'm talking about the Green Bay Packers.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
He's a free agent. In 2025, they got to figure out a deal. They got a couple, they got a young receiver in Romeo Doubs. He's a free agent in 2026. And then they just signed They just signed Josh Jacobs. The reason why this team reminds me of the Hawks a little bit is because they're still searching defensively, right? They only had 7 interceptions last year. That's the second least. They were 0 or even when it comes to turnover differential. They were 18th when it comes to takeaways. No double-digit sack guys on that team. They had Gray with 9, Preston with 8. They have similar needs. They have to get going with that offensive line. They're switching to a new scheme. They got to get some linebackers, and they need some safety help. I look at the way Jordan Love plays. I look at the way Geno plays. I go, it's comparable. The Green Bay Packers are, they were 9-8 last year, just like the Seahawks. They're like on the cusp of something, but they need to get a couple things right. I look at the Seahawks and I go, they could be on the cusp if they get some things right. Not contenders in the fact that they're going to be Super Bowl contenders, but compete for your division and get into the playoffs. The Green Bay Packers have done that already. I look at them and just the personnel-wise and the direction that they're going, I go, they're kind of similar. I'm looking at the Green Bay Packers. This is a big offseason for them. Did they find their franchise quarterback? Can they improve in those places that I just mentioned? We shall see.
It's a really interesting division. I mean, the Lions are like running it currently, but you've got otherwise, what, two teams looking at new quarterbacks. It's like it just used to be Packers all the time with the Vikings constantly just coming up short, but that's interesting. Third down. What's a rule change that makes the most sense?
That you can bring up your practice squad quarterback to be the third emergency quarterback. It's like he's already in your program. He knows the system. Yes, he's the scout for the other team, so he's running, say, the Arizona Cardinals stuff when you're playing against him that week. But he's in the quarterback room. It just makes complete sense that he's able to float and go back and forth just in case of emergency. I like the way the NFL is responding to this. We saw what the San Francisco 49ers a couple years ago go through that whole ordeal. It makes complete sense. Sometimes it's real simple. Like this, sometimes it's real complicated, like the hip drop and everything else that the competition committee has to deal with. But, yeah, too easy.
Fourth down. This is a funny question. I can guess your answer.
You already know who it is.
I already know who it is. Yeah. Who's a Seahawks player you just can't give up on?
You know what? This player is like me with my wife. She just couldn't give up on me. And I'm talking about Dee Eskridge.
I'm going to interrupt us with
What's
some breaking
on?
News.
What's the deal?
Bump. This is so let's react for 2 minutes. I'm just going to throw it to you, and then we'll come back with a little more analysis. Athletic director for Washington State University, Pat Chun, is moving to become Washington's athletic director. I'm serious. Pat Curtis, right? Who has
Pete
this report?
Yeah, Pete Thamel has it.
Pete Thamel with the report. Pat Chun, former athletic director for Washington State, is going to the University of Washington. I'm like literally need to check and make sure. Curtis knows that this is official. I'm just staring at Pete Thamel's face
Pete Thamel.
I'm just going to read the full tweet. The University of Washington, this from Pete Thamel, is finalizing a 6-year deal to hire Pat Chun, the athletic director at rival Washington State, as the school's new athletic director. He's been the AD at Washington State since 2018 and has also worked as FAU's athletic director. So again, if you are just now joining us, we're going to come back with more on this, but breaking news, Pat Chun, Wazoo's athletic director, going to Washington to fill that role recently vacated by Troy Dannon. So we will get back to this story in just a couple minutes. Do not go anywhere. This is Bump and Stacey.
This is The Timeline
with Bump and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
Well, technically, it's The Timeline on Bump and Stacey, but we are staying with breaking news. UW is hiring former Wazoo athletic director Pat Chun. It is, according to Pete Thamel, a 6-year deal with Washington for Chun. So Washington, at one point, looking for an athletic director to replace the departed Troy Dannon, who goes to Nebraska. They hire Chun. Now Washington State looking for a director of their own. Bump, how do you feel about the news?
Oh, man, this one hurts, man. It hurts. But, again, you got to live in reality. As soon as that UW job came open, I pondered if Pat would put his name in the hat. And obviously, UW is going after a guy who has helped our athletic program reach some new heights, man. He's played a big role in the basketball program, the football program. Obviously, the most successful program we have over there, honestly, is our rowing program, believe it or not. This one hurts, man. I talked to him yesterday. I got no indication that was going to happen. Obviously, he's not going to tell me, hey, Bump. You know,
By the way, one last thing.
I'm dipping tomorrow. Don't worry about it. But, this one hurts, man. UW, you guys are getting a guy who is going to just embrace the UW culture. He's going to try to take it to another level. He's going to be at every event he can be at. He is a guy that's easy to talk to. He's an innovator. He's a good dude. I mean, he's a good dude, right? The Coug in me hates this move, but then again, you got to realize this is business. UW is a step up. I'm sure they're paying him more money. He's got way more resources. This one hurts, Pat, man, but I appreciate you, man. Cougs, feel your feels, drink your drink. You know, let's pull one up for the homie that's gone. But this one hurts a bit.
I interrupted your fourth down about D. Eskridge with the news. The 253, oh, man, I really wanted to hear about D. Eskridge. we can get back to it. But, yeah, I, as a UW alum, I like the move. I think that the football program has been in a good place. Obviously, they'd always like to be better, but Jake Dickert is a good dude who cares about those guys. And I think, obviously, you know, Kyle Smith moving on was a great hire for that program. I think Pat Chun very much valued a sense of community with Washington State and building that up with coaches. So I like the hire. I like the move. I am empathetic for Washington State fans who, along with UW, are just trading the feelings back and forth of coaches departing, athletic directors departing. It's a very weird time for college sports.
Yeah, it is. This is what it is now. This is what it is. I think UW is safe as far as Pat being there for the duration of his contract, because I feel like he's taking on a challenge. You're going to a new conference. Logistically, there's some things that you have to work out. The NIL, all that stuff, right? I think you guys are safe when it comes to Pat being there for a while. I think this is a challenge that's going to take the full contract to kind of reap the benefits of getting a guy like Pat. As far as WSU, I mean, you got to go find your next guy or next girl who's going to be here for at least 3 to 4 years. And I think that's the way you got to start looking at these things. If you get a coach to stay for 2 to 3, that's a win. You get an AD to stay from 3 to 4, that's a win right there. It's just the climate of this thing, man. A lot of people are going in on Pat right now, calling him a traitor and all that. You do the same thing. Mm-hmm. If you were presented more money, better opportunity, you're on the West Side, easier to get to places. I mean, my man is from the Midwest. The UW is going to be playing in the Midwest. Again, the same way I looked at Kyle Smith and the moves that he made to go to Stanford, it made sense for him and his family. And this one makes sense for Pat and his family. I thought that Ohio State was going to be looking at Pat because he did go to Ohio State. His daughter goes there, I believe, and he has connections there. But it's just what it is, man. This is what it is. College sports, people be moving.
I know people don't want to hear it. I know that I'm biased, but I think it was the right move for Pat. I think it's a good move for Pat, and I'm very curious to see what he does for UW. It's in a very interesting spot as a school, entering a conference that's good for its status overall, but taking only a portion of that conference payout, obviously. And then obviously they're dealing with, you know, a brand new men's basketball coach, a brand new football coach, and trying to rebuild that team. It's a fascinating place to be in for Washington. You need someone who's ready, like you said, for that challenge. I wanted to continue to focus on just kind of, you know, we both talked about how we liked the move, or at least how we understood the move. Now we were talking about the way college sports are now from the 206. This is why, as a Coug fan, I don't get invested in college sports anymore. It's sad. That in itself is such a bummer to me. Like, I understand that college sports, the landscape has changed, and it feels harder to get attached to anyone, coaches, players, anything. But college sports, what has always made it different to me is that kind of diehard passion that, yeah, NFL fans have for their team, but it's different. It's a different flavor.
Well, it's never been that way for coaches and admin.
No.
For the players, it's been, okay, sure, you're going to be here for 5 years. Moves like this happen all the time. I mean, head coaches leave, ADs leave. It stings a bit more now because now you're compounding the situation with the athletes being able to leave. Mm-hmm. So I understand your feeling about college sports not being the same, because it isn't. It will never be the same. Maybe it'll get tweaked a little bit with some regulations. This is just what it is. So don't cheer for the name on the back of the jersey. Cheer for the name on the front of the jersey. And that's what I'll continue to do. Even though this hurts, I will still rep my crimson and gray loud and proud. I'll still do anything I can to help out this university. But you do that knowing that the relationships you have, or the people in position of power and the guys on the fields or the girls on the courts or whatnot, that's going to change. So forget investing your emotions into the players and just do it for the university. It's a tough time to be a Coug right now, because we are the ones that are going to get hit like this a bit more consistently than the bigger names. Even a university like UW, they've been hit a couple of times, but they also got hit because they made it to the national championship game. If they didn't make it to the national championship game, Kalen DeBoer would be here.
Yeah.
So circumstances are different, man. It's unfortunate. Wazoo, put me on that hiring committee when it comes to this next AD, man. Holla at me.
253 says money talks, and money is part of it. I mean, Kalen DeBoer got paid more money to go to Alabama over Washington. I don't know. I'm guessing Jed Fish got paid more money going to Washington over Arizona. I don't know the details of Pat Chun's contract, but I would assume that there is more money. I'm assuming there is more money for Kyle Smith going to Stanford over staying at Washington State. Money is part of that. But so too is opportunity, prestige, and career goals that these people have. The challenge for Washington State and Washington to different degrees will be, well, how do we make ourselves as a program, as an institution, a place that can draw that in? Because if you can't raise the same amount of money as some SEC powerhouse or a school with a ton of booster money, all right, well, that's your challenge. But then how do you make yourself the destination? Who do you go after to try to stay there? Do you find someone local? Mm-hmm. Do you, find someone who played at the school? Do you, find someone with connections? Do you try to make the most of a great season, a trip to March Madness, get back there and suddenly look like a really promising young team? I mean, how do you make yourself that destination is the challenge these programs will have.
Location has a huge deal to do with it, especially when you're comparing Pullman to Seattle. Location is big. What we can do as Cougs, May 17th, I'm co-hosting a collective event for our athletic program. What we need to do is show up in Spokane on May 17th and open up them wallets, get that bank account rolling, and put money in these athletes' pockets so we know that we have a chance of keeping these guys here, man. That's what it is, because money does talk. And there's some money out there for WSU. Is there enough money to compete with the higher-ups? Probably not, but there might be enough to keep a kid or two that you weren't expecting or we weren't expecting to keep. So just come together, Cougs. Don't hate on Pat too much. Feel your feels. Get it all out. But, man, you understand what it is. It's a business. And if you look at it that way, then we'll show up on May 17th in Spokompton and get it done.
Spokompton. Yeah, I know that there are some people that feel kind of defeated about their school for whatever reason. Like, I love the hiring of Pat Chun. I felt so defeated after Kalen DeBoer and a million and five players left a football program that I had never seen a team that good in my viewing experience.
Yep.
And that was defeating. Like, everyone feels that defeated feeling. I'm sure Coug fans feel that right now.
And honestly, it hurts. It's a compliment as well. UW wanted our AD and paid him for it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, good for you, Pat.
It's a good way to look at it. Anyways, just fascinating news. Again, UW hiring former Wazoo athletic director Pat Chun. We are switching gears, going to focus on Seahawks for most of the final hour here. Don't go anywhere. It's Bump and Stacey.
Bump and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Rost.
Bump, do you want to guess what the Lions, Browns, Eagles, Packers all have in common?
Honestly, no. I want to go home.
Okay, well.
All right, but yeah. All right, for the sake of the show. Okay, I'm locked back in. I have a job to do. Okay, what is it, Stacey?
They all finished in or near the top five for Pro Football Network's and Pro Football Focus's top offensive line rankings in 2023. Not every team with a great offensive line was a great offense. The Atlanta Falcons had one of the better offensive lines in football last season, and obviously we're not a very good team. They have myriad other issues. But the offensive line is an area where not just Seahawks fans, but the Seahawks coaches and front office know that they need to improve. ESPN's Brady Henderson was out at the league's annual meetings, and he talked with Mike McDonald. And Mike McDonald said they are not done adding to their own O-line by, quote, any stretch of the imagination. And that is a good thing, Bump.
Yeah, it is a good thing. That offensive line needs some work. I think there are guys who are set up to have to at least compete for a job. The main position I'm looking at is Oluwatimi against Nick Harris. I want to see how that battle kind of works out. But, right, you still need to add depth. Guys get hurt all the time in football, especially with this offensive line. How are you going to address this during the draft? My wish list is Troy Fautanu is available, so you grab him and just bolster that. He says, look, there's a lot of time, right? You don't start playing until September. So we're going to try to figure this thing out and get the right mesh of guys. The thing I love about the offensive line is that you can get a guy and no one can know about him and he can be a baller. It's not like you're looking at linebackers and safeties and receivers where everyone has a list of five or six guys or big names that you know and say, that needs to be the guy. For the most part, the average fan knows about three or four tackles in the league who are really good. Then after that, it's kind of like, all right, we shall see. So this is going to be fun to kind of see how this whole thing works out as far as their evaluation of offensive linemen and who they bring in. But I'm hoping if Troy's available at 16, I'm going to keep saying it, every chance I get, go ahead and get him.
Well, and I don't disagree with you. I love that pick. I'm a little bit biased, but he's also got great versatility for a line that's dealt with injuries in the past that has question marks at guard and tackle. Why not get someone who could potentially play both? But I think that an important part of this conversation has been that for basically all of Pete Carroll's tenure and kind of heading into the season, the offensive line in Seattle has not been great. They've had individual players that have been good. Dwayne Brown was great still at left tackle. Even after being a multi-time Pro Bowler with Houston, he came here and was by no means like washed. Mm-hmm. He was their best offensive lineman, not particularly close, a leader in that room. We've been really happy with like Abe Lucas at times, Charles Cross, really promising as young players. But there have still been question marks. And what becomes so difficult about evaluating talent on a team and where you are as a team is when you can't reach your full potential. And the best way to do that is by shoring up the trenches. Like it is when I see analysis of Geno, of the running backs and the run game, of the wide receivers, it's always in my mind with this little caveat of, but what would it look like with a better offensive line?
I mean, but you just said that some of the best offensive lines in the game were on teams that didn't have a lot of success. But I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
You got to protect the quarterback, get after the quarterback. That, like, if you can't do that, then you have to be so much better on the outside to kind of combat that, which puts so much pressure on a guy like Geno and everybody else. We want Geno to be able to sit in the pocket, go through his reads, and let the ball go. No O-line is going to be perfect. He's going to have to move and adjust his protection and all that. But, yeah, man, it all starts with the big boys in the trenches. So that's why getting Leonard was so important on the defensive side. That's why having the tackles we do have now when they're healthy is so great. I'm really hoping that the center position works out, man. He's the second quarterback on the football field. He makes the adjustments that the quarterback doesn't make. If you have an offensive lineman who can slide protection and do all that on his own, that allows Geno to walk up to the field, look at the box, look at the secondary, and just one less thing for him to have to worry about. So, yes, offensive line, it is completely necessary. I would love to have an offensive line that is ranked in the top 10. I think last year they started off 12th or 11th, and then by the end of the season, we're looking at talking about PFF. Mm-hmm. End of the season, they're like 20-something.
Yeah.
I would love to have these guys have just a strong unit to be able to open up the run lanes, protect the boy or the man throwing the ball.
Well, and I just have so many questions about even the health of the offensive line entering the season. Like, is Abe Lucas going to be dealing with a chronic injury? Obviously, they bring in George Fant again to offer some like insurance there if it doesn't work out there. It's a really good tackle class, obviously. Like, there are guys that they can take, but I still have so many questions about this group, and it feels so easy to overlook sometimes. And what's cool is that there's promise, that you've got some pieces to work with that we both really
like. Some young pieces.
What's important is that they really improve, because I don't know how big a step the defense can take from last year to this year. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's imperative that your offense be as good as you can possibly get, because I'm not looking at the defense and expecting them to go from 31st against the run to first.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect that type of jump. It would be awesome, but I don't expect that. You got to take these little baby steps. And we said it yesterday, you have to be really good at one thing. What has the best chance to be really good at something? I'm looking at the offense and all the weapons you have over there and saying, all right, there's a possibility. And then I love just Grubb and his offense, known to throw the football all across the yard, but he will run that thing as well. So, yeah, it's on the offense. The offense got to get this thing going. If the defense can just be mediocre. Stacey, this is our third football season together, and I feel like we've been asking just for
the basics.
The defense just be mediocre. Just be somewhere near the middle.
Yeah.
Every category. Just be somewhere near the middle. And we got a shot.
But you know what they do every year is they do one thing well. Like there'll be one thing where they're like, oh, this. And you're like, no, that's not what I meant. So it'll be like, be better against the pass. How about we do that, but then be horrible against the run? And it's like, no.
Yeah.
No, we didn't ask for that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that. Have you ever seen that movie, The Wish, or whatever? It's also like a short story that's famous where you ask for one thing and it almost intentionally misunderstands it so that it ends up being a bad thing.
I've seen that.
You know,
who's
like
in
you
that?
Say, I think it's not Nicole Kidman, is it? But it would be, it's really dark.
Oh,
it would be
yeah.
I wish I had $1 million. And then it has like your husband or wife die and you get $1 million life insurance mm-hmm. policy. So it's like you wish for something good and then you just get kind of a bad thing. That's what the defense.
So we don't
that
want
was
that.
A lot. I went way off the rails with that one. But what I mean is that they've never felt genuinely wholly improved.
You know what's messed up about that?
The premise of that?
Is that wish on Instagram mm-hmm. is essentially that. You think you're going to get something and you get something completely different or the quality ain't great.
I don't want a Temu defense.
Yeah, you're sacrificing something if you order off a wish.
Get the Shein defense out of here. That's not what I want.
That's not what I want.
No, and they've got some really good pieces, but I think that you are closer to being a really good offense. I know that's not the bread and butter for Mike McDonald, but you've got a good quarterback. You've got a starter for 2024. It may not be the quarterback everyone wants, but you've got a starter. You've got two good running backs. You've got three great wide receivers, including two who are proven in this league. You know what I mean? Like, if you improve up front, if you manage to stay healthy, that's a good defense. Or excuse me, offense. That is like a top 10, 12 scoring offense.
And you got Dirty, man. No one really knows what Dirty's going to do in the NFL.
Yeah. All right, you guys. We're
not Dirty. I'm sorry, Grub. Sorry, Grub.
I mean, Dirty and Grub, for that matter.
Yeah.
Seahawks.com reporter John Boyle was also at the annual meetings, and he was hearing from Mike McDonald. They also heard from John Schneider. We haven't talked about any of that, so we're going to ask John about it next. Don't go anywhere.